Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience of owning them is a great one.
A new legacy in sound. JLab's new luxury over-ear headphones, seamlessly blending innovation and lab quality sound.
Over here at Fake Doctors Real Friends, we love our JLab Audio headphones. They feature over 70 hours of playtime, four different colorways to choose from, and three noise control modes. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit JLab.com to find your kind of tech.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Did you know the all-new Target Circle is the free and easy way to get the most deals at Target? Now, when you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout. Plus, with unlimited same-day delivery, Target Circle 360 is the fastest way to get your order to your door or someone else's. Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for your first year of membership. And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day. Visit Target.com/circle or the Target app for more details. Same-day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35. For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in-store or at Target.com/circle card.
We should start right off because I have some ideas.
Go ahead, Johnny. Go ahead, Johnny.
Because you guys have to grind this, and I'm so excited that some things occurred to me while I was watching this thing.
Go ahead. I love it when you come on. You know why? Because you come prepared. You're like, you're as prepared as Donald and I. You're like, you're wound up.
Well, I am. Look, going back and watching this, first of all, it's hard not to feel really proud of it.
Yeah.
And this one, I thought, deserved some backdrop because the one last week, 115, is a spectacular episode. Zach, you're particularly great in that episode with Sarah. Thank and you. Then the monologues with the shrink let the whole ensemble just shine. Right. And I busted my ass on those monologues because the writing was astonishing.
And you notice there's no cuts. I mean, we were clearly all told
it'd be wonders.
Yeah, especially since Donald knew it. So we were clearly all told that there would be no cuts.
But what I thought was really interesting and maybe interesting for people listening is a little bit of context. And what I mean is, because in this episode, it became clear to me just how gelled the ensemble is, whether it's Kenny and Judy, you and me, Zaki, Donald and Sarah. The thing is just watertight. And the reason is because I think, now, as we discussed already, 9/11 had already occurred. We're around about the middle of December here. And so what happened in New York, which I'll circle this back, was the New York Yankees lost the World Series in 7 games to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And the only reason that's relevant is because they lost, there was no ticker tape parade in New York City. So we were invited to the Thanksgiving parade in New York City, and it was the first taste of real rock star for all of us because we worked till Wednesday night till about 9:25, and this was a week or two before this episode. And then we were whisked off to LAX, where we occupied the entire front of first class.
There was only one other person. There were only one other.
That's right.
and it was a boy band. It was like O-Town or something like that. We shared first class. It was the cast of Scrubs and O-Town. I remember
it,
this
flight. It might as well have been a private plane. It wasn't, right. But it was first class. It wasn't coach. It was first. It wasn't business class. It was first class, and we were going to New York to participate in the Thanksgiving Day parade.
Yeah.
Now, remember, there had been no mass gatherings allowed in New York since that Tuesday morning in September. This just wasn't allowed. The Yankees were supposed to be there, but they weren't.
Right.
So we fly overnight, and you guys can chime in, but we fly overnight. We're deposited at some chapel on the Upper West Side somewhere.
Yeah, we didn't even go to the hotel. They dropped us off at the freaking parade.
Yeah, and we were lying on the ground in the chapel to kind
of get. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we got sideways on the plane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sideways.
As you do.
And then we got up, and Zachy, I think you brought your nephew onto the float.
Yes. Yeah, I did.
And it was a quasi-racist kind of Pocahontas float. Yeah. And
I think they've gotten rid of some of those since then, I think. Yeah, but
absolutely.
I think ours was.
But here's the Scrubs cast and a quasi-racist Pocahontas float on the Upper West Side in the staging area, and who pulls up behind us but the Wiggles in the big red car. Now, I had gone to Wiggles concerts with my son every time they're in Los Angeles for the last couple of years. I was eating, sleeping, and drinking the Wiggles. So I got off the float, and I went back to the big red car. I introduced myself to Murray and Jeff, and I introduced myself to everybody, and I became friends with the Wiggles, and I am to this day.
You hang out with the Wiggles still?
Not really, but I did a video for them, and they became my friends. They're great educators.
My memory, sorry to interrupt one second, Johnny. My memory is that my nephew was a very outspoken kid and not shy at all. And I don't know how old he was, but he was little. And
he had to be like 9, dude.
No, younger.
Right.
He was a little kid.
And so Al Roker, we're off the float at one point, and Al Roker is interviewing us. And he goes, and I'm here with the cast of Scrubs, and I've got Johnny C. McGinley, Donald Faison. He's going around introducing the whole cast. And my nephew, and this is live television, and my nephew goes, what about me? And Al Roker, it's awkward, and Al Roker ignores him and starts, so tell us about the show. Interrupts him again. What about me?
Stop.
And finally, Al feels bad enough that he's like, oh, I'm sorry, young man. You're right. And what's your name? And then he introduces himself. But I was like, it was my first.
Wasn't he throwing gang signs, too? Like, wasn't Jagger throwing gang signs?
He didn't know any, like, real gang signs, but he had seen on TV how rappers and whomever throw gang signs. So we're on the float, and he's, like, throwing these, like, almost gang signs.
When I spoke to Al Roker after he cut, I said, how is this for a turnout? And he said, this will be the largest turnout in the history of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I said, well, give me an estimate. And he said, there'll be about 3.5 million people here. And so every time we went through an intersection, and I'll wrap this story up in a minute, but every time we went down an intersection, you could see it was 100 to 200 people deep at every intersection.
Yeah.
I've never seen that many people, I never will, in my life.
Yeah, yeah, I remember being like, wow, there are so many people here. And we were on the float, and you're right, every time we passed an intersection, it looked like it went so deep into the intersection. And I remember thinking, how are all of these people? It was like sardines, too. Like, they were packed together.
Because nobody had been allowed to gather since that Tuesday.
And another thing I remember is that my nephew was on the float, and I thought, oh, this will be fun for him. He was bored in 30 seconds, right? And I was like, oh, fuck, I got to take care of this kid for a whole parade.
Yeah, we had to, and it's all the way from Uptown all the way to Macy's.
Yeah, and he's throwing his fake gang signs for a while, and then he got bored of that. And then there was like an upstairs in the float. I don't know if it was like it was like in Pocahontas' head or something.
Well, no, it was a multi-tiered ship.
It was a boat.
Yeah, but even like in the non-outside area, there was some spot he found, and then he went up there and he found bubble wrap, and I was like, okay, fucking bubble wrap will entertain him for a little while. Then he got over he was stomping on the bubble wrap, and I was like, I'm never having kids. This is like the worst.
My only point bringing this up, and I'll circle it back, was that, and also remember, a couple of weeks earlier, actually about a month earlier, we had been picked up for the back nine.
Right.
And we ran around the hospital with our heads cut off. And so that meant you had paychecks until May, the first week of May or so.
Right.
Because in TV, you only get paid for episodes produced.
Right.
And so,
yeah,
and
just
meant-
so you know, just let's explain to people who don't know, the show was picked up for the first 13 episodes, and they kind of see how you do in the ratings. And then if you do well enough in the ratings, you get the rest of the order, which is in business talk is called the back nine, meaning you get nine more episodes.
That back
and we
nine.
Had been given that news about a month earlier, and we ran around the hospital like we'd won the Stanley Cup. I remember vividly.
That. Yeah, dude. Yeah.
And my only point in this is that between getting picked up and now about 15 or 16 episodes into it, and I can see it in this episode, as we'll discuss, but the ensemble is watertight. Whether it meant going on a trip together or getting picked up, people are starting to vibe off each other. And it's as clear as day when I was watching it. It's as what Donald and Sarah are doing. As you guys know, I think the camera is an X-ray machine and it sees through all the bullshit. And what they're doing together, there's zero bullshit. And what Zach is doing at the end with Sarah on that cot, there's no bullshit. It's just tight and right. And I got a chill. It really got me.
You gave me a chill too, because I got to tell you, I didn't remember in that scene with Sarah what happened. I didn't know if it was going to turn romantic. I didn't know if I cried. I couldn't remember. And I was actually moved by the two of us because nothing happens. Like would happen in real life. You know, in the movies we'd kiss. In the movies I'd break down and cry. But in real life, two friends might just sit there in silence for a minute. And I just thought that was beautifully done.
I think it's the real privilege of friendship when nothing does happen. So that I don't have to demonstrate to you anything and you don't have to demonstrate anything to me. And real friendship is when stuff is allowed and it's a tricky verb to settle. Yeah. And you guys let it settle in front of the lens. And as we'll discuss, Will McKenzie, he just let the scene play. And the two actors, it's really lovely. And on a primetime comedy, it's spectacular. It's spectacular.
Should we start the show?
Yeah, but we should start the show. But I think Johnny, because of that beautiful prologue, should have the honor of counting us into the song. Johnny, please.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Some stories about a show we made. About a bunch of docs and nurses and a janitor who loved to hate. I said, here's the stories that we all should know.
So I've been using this Scrubs wiki, Johnny, that gives us...
What is Scrubs? I've heard you reference it. By the way, you guys are killing this podcast.
Well, we're having a lot of fun.
What is Scrubs wiki?
Scrubs wiki is, if you just put in Scrubs wiki into the Google machine, it brings you up this this thing that I guess multiple fans or one fan has curated. It's on a website called fandom.com. I guess it's a place where fans can collect trivia and share stories, and, you know, it's a fan site. But someone, and I'm thinking it might be one person, has put a lot of work into this, because every episode it has the synopsis, it has recurring themes, it has guest stars, it has the famous quotes, and it has trivia from each episode. And today, and I often reference it, and today I went to look at the trivia, and the first line of trivia, it says, "Hi, Zach! ! Glad you're enjoying Scrubs Wiki. Have me on the podcast? Have Joelle search for my email."
Wow.
So I've been discovered by the curator of Scrubs Wiki as an avid fan, but I will have Joelle seek you out. And I have to tell you, you've done a fantastic job, because it's very useful. I can find out all sorts of trivia, like Kelso mentions Baxter for the very first time in this episode.
Yeah, there's a lot of trivia in here.
There's a lot of interesting stuff. So I think, Joelle says she's going to track him down. And this fella knows a lot about Scrubs. So I think it might be fun to have him on. We can try and stump him.
Well, let me get to you at early on, at a minute or two in, you and Sarah in the batting cage. You, Zach.
Yeah. Why is JD at the batting cage, Johnny?
No, as Donald knows, no one says you don't even play sports. There's no one's ever said that in the history of the English language. Which is great writing, and you deliver it like you really know sports.
But I'm
and
not
you
even
and Sarah in there, you redeem yourself from early on when you get bricks dropped on your head and you anticipated it. You don't anticipate the beanball in this.
No, sir.
And neither does Sarah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you,
both committed.
Yeah, we did. I did not flinch. I was not going to let that happen again, Johnny. From that brick incident, it did not happen again. And it's hard to anticipate a softball being thrown at your head.
Well, you both did it, and as a result, it's Charlie Chaplin funny.
But why is JD at the batting cages? He's not even with Turk. It'd be one thing if he's with Turk. Like, Turk made me come. I'm alone at the batting cages?
Yeah, neither one of you play sports. Neither one of you play baseball. Neither one of you.
Not a chance.
In real life, too.
I think
Sarah, like in high school, Sarah was like on the shot put team.
Yeah.
Who's on the shot put team?
I've never heard Sarah talk about a single sport. Have you? Oh, ski. She's a good snowboarder.
She's a damn good snowboarder. Yeah.
Yeah. She's Canadian. I think that's a rule up there. You got to be able to ski or snowboard. But she, I just didn't understand that bit of writing. Mike Schwartz, we should say, was the writer of this episode, along with, as Johnny mentioned, Will McKenzie, who is an incredible director and directed a lot of people's favorite episode, the musical episode.
Will McKenzie is famous on set for the way he says action.
and
cut.
Yeah, do it. Do you remember Johnny how to do it? No, he does cut, but he also does this. So
Donald's coming into the room.
Yeah, he'll.
Oh, that's right. He talks into it.
He sums up the scene. He's like, okay, and here comes Donald, and he's mad about what Carla just did, and action.
This is and cut.
I think he's directed a zillion sitcoms too. I mean, he's a legendary TV director. He is. Yeah. I think he's retired, I imagine, now, but he is just a legend.
And a pretty good tennis player, apparently. Very good tennis. Yeah, that's what I heard.
I heard
Will can make it so you're running around while he's standing in one place.
There were a lot of directors that when you showed up on set on Monday morning, you saw who it was and you just had a big old smile on your face.
And, 100%.
And Will McKenzie was always one of those guys for all of us. We just would like, he was like, you know, he just... Just felt like a grandfather figure because he was an older guy, but he had so much experience and he had a big old smile on his face. And I love that guy.
Yeah. Also, in this episode, some of the, I don't know how to say this, some of the peripheral characters, whether it's Sammy, which I'll get to in a minute, or Neil as the janitor, get to really shine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the janitor at, I think 103, when he says girl problems, and then you say, and then Cox says, I'd say they're a B cup, and the button is, at least they're real.
Yeah.
Laugh out loud. I'm stealing Zachy's laugh out loud.
I did. I laughed out loud at that, man. And, you know, because it's funny because, you know, we keep fucking with Bill, Johnny, because he's hanging on by his fingernails to this old lore that the janitor barely talked to anybody in season one and he was just still deciding by the time he started season two if he was going to make the janitor solely a figment of JD's imagination.
Billy's not still hanging on to that.
He is.
And every episode the janitor's talking to a different cast.
And Donald and I joke that we're like detectives being like, well, how would Bill possibly rationalize this one? And you know, again, Bill would say, well, he's not interacting with Johnny C. If he's a figment of JD's imagination, he hears what Cox says and just builds on it, you know.
But also, and I'm going to keep circling back with this, you could see, and in this case, it's just a simple, clean scene. Donald and Zach at 209, when you take the phone call from your mom and you find out about Mr. Peters, you two are just, it's in carpentry, it's called tongue and groove. You guys are just effortless, and it sets up the whole scene. There's a ton of expository stuff in it, and it's just effortless.
Yeah,
and the scene really plays, and it's only because of what you guys have become in those, I guess, 17 or 18 weeks by then.
Yeah, I remember. Well, I don't remember any of this episode except for the handshake, and I had no idea. And when we did the handshake, I had no clue what Sarah and I, like, I thought it was something that Sarah and I made up on set and it turned into something in the scene. But I think we made it up for the scene and it turned into something that we did on set.
We saw this handshake. Johnny and I had to endure this handshake get longer and longer. I think by the end of 9 years, it took them an hour and a half to do the handshake.
And that was just to say hello to each other.
Yeah. During the Vietnam War, I found out it was called a DAP.
Yeah. We would dapping it up.
Yeah. You would dap somebody.
But wait, now, Donald, you don't remember if you guys were just fucking around and made this up and then put it in the show or it was written?
I think it came from the handshake in the show. I think our handshake, we made it up for the show. And then it turned into something that we did all the time when we saw each other.
But that, that once again, is what I'm talking about. It's effortless. Yeah. It's just complete with totally Lon. And then you guys throw it away and go right into the scene. And that's later on. But I was so struck by so many of these vignettes that are completely tongue and groove.
Yeah, I agree, man. And Donald, did you make that up or did Sarah contribute? Like, it's pretty great.
Some of it I made up. A lot of it I know I made up because it's
it has rhythm to it. That's why.
Well, there's that. And then there's also
Yeah, but Sarah could do all that stuff.
Yeah, she could. Yeah. There was it was also a what is it that remember how we were talking about The Color Purple and Miss when Celia and her sister are broken up and they're doing the
patty cake thing. Yeah.
So it also has a little bit of that in it, where it's like, where we slap each other's hand. I don't know, man. All I know is, that thing was made up for this episode, and then it turned into.
Something. I like what Johnny said too. That you kind of go into this elaborate thing, and then you just kind of go into the scene like nothing happened. Right. It's as though you just did a high five. I thought that was good.
But it's the same way. It's the same way, and I feel like I'm. Maybe it sounds like I'm blowing too much smoke up your guys' asses, but
I'll take it. We'll take it.
I'm like Donald. I don't remember any of this stuff. So then when I go back and watch it, I'm sincerely struck by different things. And in this episode, unlike the last one we watched together, I wasn't struck by as many things other than the circumstances that were occurring outside of Scrubs. In this, I was really struck by what was happening in front of the lens and what the writers did. And then at 3 minutes, there's this great walk and talk between Zaki and Cox, and the writers let Cox be this fierce, fierce, patient advocate. And it grounds him in a way it's just genius because it gives him license to then go do what he's about to go do, which is destroy a lab.
Now, this is the first time we really see Cox have this raw emotion, Johnny. I think that, you know, we had seen him be upset. There's the episode where he's just saying, JD, you need to have a life. I have no fucking life. But this is, you know, the first time we see how much pain this man has and how dedicated he is to his profession. So I just talk a little about that. And of course, destroying this lab.
Papert in the background.
With Charles Papert. Charles Papert, our Steadicam operator's back, is one of the lab techs. But I mean, do you remember that day trashing that lab? That must have been cathartic.
I do. And I had been lucky enough in 1994, and lucky is in italics, to have been with Michael Caine, your actor in your lovely movie, up in Valdez, Alaska, and with Steven Seagal directing an epic movie for Warner Brothers called On Deadly Ground. Steven was the director. Yeah. And I got to destroy a house. And halfway through it, I find a petrified walrus penis, which is called an usik. And so
Whoa, slow down. You're going to not. Right? You can't rush. You can't. Hold on. The listeners have questions. How did you find a pet? Don't worry. We're going to get back to destroying the lab, everybody. How did you know that it was a petrified walrus penis?
I asked. There's this long phallus. And I asked the production designer. I said, what's this? And he goes, well, it's a petrified walrus penis. And I said, God almighty, just call action and get on my eyeliner. If you don't think that's coming in the frame, you're out of your mind.
Look out, everybody.
And so what my takeaway from destroying a house, just destroying it, was go slow. If you destroy a house or a lab too fast, the camera doesn't get it. It's just like, as Donald definitely knows, either taking or throwing a punch in front of the lens. Yeah. If you go too fast, the camera doesn't see it.
Yeah,
and it's the same with destroying a room. You've got to go slow. And it's funny, Billy or Will ramped it up to high speed for the throw through the window, because otherwise that stuff happens too fast, and you don't get it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, Zach, as a filmmaker, you know, unless you cover a fight or destroying something pretty meticulously, the lens misses it. And yeah. So my only thought in destroying that lab was take your time.
Yeah. Well,
when I watched that, I was like, how much trouble would Dr. Cox be in if he were to do that? And how much money did he just throw out the window by doing all of that?
I know. Like, I was thinking the same thing.
I thought the same thing, too. I thought, like, do they have some system or no one's going to tell Kelso? Because, I mean, Carla implies that he freaks out at least once a year.
Right.
And I was like, does everyone sort of protect him? Because, you know, in the real world of a hospital, he'd be in a phenomenal amount of trouble for this.
Yeah, I couldn't. That was the first thing I thought. And then I thought when Carla said he does this once a year, I was like, holy shit. Yo, Cox is, you know, it's clear that he's in pain, but he's in like a lot of pain. And to build it up to be able to just damage thousands of dollars of equipment, you know what I mean? You have to really be on that level of fuck it. I don't care anymore. I just
he clearly doesn't care
anymore.
But they also really need Cox. You know, Cox is
everybody needs Cox. You're absolutely right.
Whoa, look what you just said, Donald.
That came out a little different.
You're gonna pull over there, Donald. You're going 55 and a 30.
Yeah. I'm gonna. That's gonna be my new ringtone. Donald yelling, everybody needs Cox.
In the hospital.
In the hospital. And I met the character.
And then at 4:39, we get to see the janitor do medical jargon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he kills it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember.
Well, you know that Neil auditioned for your part. You know that trivia, right, Johnny?
Of course. But I mean, he's such a spectacular actor. But I'd never seen him do. You got to remember, all medical jargon is Latin based. So when you really get into it, you're just talking Latin. And right. So for the janitor just to peel out some Latin crushed me.
By the way, I wondered if I think that might be the only time the janitor is ever in our apartment.
I was going to ask that. Is this the only? We should ask Bill if he remembers putting the janitor in the apartment at any point.
Okay. Donald has pulled the lever for an Ask Bill, Joel. Bill, you're not going to remember. I bet the guy on Wiki Scrubs knows better than you, but we're going to ask you. By the way, you know what we should do? We should also, Joel, that's what we should do with that guy. We should have an Ask Bill button, but we should have an also Ask the Scrubs Wiki guy.
Oh, that's genius.
Because he knows he's the keeper of the trivia more than Bill. Bill's going to be like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8. And Bill has found his what you talking about, Willis, Johnny. He's found his catchphrase. So now he just says five, and the fans think it's hilarious.
It is hilarious.
He starts the theme song, and Donald and I have to stop the damn thing. So anyway, Joel, when we talk to that guy, when we find him, let's ask him if we can ask him Scrubs trivia. But for now, since we only have Bill, do you think this is the only time that the janitor is ever in our apartment, even though it's a fantasy?
Neil, I'm going by memory here, guys, but Neil Flynn was in Turk and JD's apartment when there's a fantasy about him being a doctor, and I believe he returns to try and fix their air conditioning or pipes or something in a later season. But I think he was only there twice, except once I think it was implied that he was there a third time that he and Dr. Cox moved JD's bed somewhere, and they did it together.
Thank you, Bill.
And once again at 5:49, when Kelso and Jude are together, they're butter. They're total butter.
Oh gosh, yeah.
They're butter.
Now, yeah. How about Judy? They're great. How about Judy? So first, Judy, I noticed, because this is funny tracking the when we shot this in 2001, that Judy says, "I got to get a tape deck," which I thought was funny, and then when she brings it in, it's actually a CD player. It's just funny, even now.
How did you realize that? You're definitely
that's pretty
not
good,
watching
Jackie.
The show, dude. That's very good, because I did not pick up on that.
Well, I caught her saying tape deck, and then my brain went, there's no way it was cassettes. I remember it was at least CDs. And then I guess that was just still – I'm imagining in 2001 we were still using the expression tape deck, like, oh, get a tape deck.
I have a question for you on the heels of that. When Kenny says, like Motley Crue and Winger – my son's a bit of a headbanger. First of all, that crushed me. And second of all, is that the first time, first of many, when he refers to his son? who turns out is just a cavalcade of eccentricities.
A cavalcade of eccentricities is a great title for a screenplay. But that is funny. The Scrubs Wiki said it's the first time he mentions Baxter. I don't know if it's the first time his son comes up, but this might be the first time his son comes up in terms of being a cavalcade of eccentricities.
His son, it turns out, is the single most tortured person on the planet.
I know, and we never got to meet him. And we never met his wife. I think it was Enid,
yeah, but
right?
It's so
we
much better. It's so much better.
No, it was all... Remember on Cheers when you never saw... Cliff. What's her name?
Cliff's family.
No, I think it was Norm's wife, Vera, we never saw. Joelle gave me the thumbs up. Am I right, Joelle?
Wow, well played, Jackie.
Well played, Zach.
The bartender would always alley-oop him. See, I bet sports reference. And then he'd have a one-liner and dunk it, if you will.
I blew the one-liner because I didn't remember it. Vera does make an appearance on Cheers, though, I guess.
Really? And then Joelle, did you go on the Cheers wiki and find out that Vera does make an appearance on the Thanksgiving Day episode?
As you guys have done so wonderfully, I do want to look at Sammy for a second, who is astonishing in this episode.
This probably is... I hate to say it, but probably his first real, I mean, other than one-liners, this is the first episode where Sammy really shined as the lawyer.
And even when he and Jude together are completely money.
Did you guys get goosebumps when they sang together?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But the first time we see Sammy, he does this thing with his hand where he puts it way in the back of his skull. Donald, my triceps are too big to even do this.
Look at that bicep.
Look at your fucking arms. Look at your arms, man.
To you listeners out there, I want you to know this guy is still fucking ripped. He's got bigger biceps than anyone I know, I think.
Are you still doing a lot of paddle surfing?
Yeah, every day.
Every day you paddle surf.
Yeah, and then Johnny, I build the baseball field.
Johnny, you are ripped.
But let me say something.
You got like that Mr. Miyagi body where it's like you're doing, you know, active, you know, everything is for a purpose. I row a board in the ocean. I'm using my hands to build.
I thought you were saying he had the body of Pat Morita, and I was like, no, he does not, Donald.
No.
But when
it's
Sammy's,
like wax on, wax off.
The first time we see Sammy, he's got that hand over his head, and then the button on the scene with Judy is he goes, "Careful, I've been hurt before."
Yeah. Oh my God!
He dropped me. He totally dropped me.
He loves Judy. He loves Carla. He loves
when
Carla.
When she hugs him, and he's like, "Don't let go."
And for those that's later on. And for those who don't know, asides, when you keep an aside real, it's almost impossible, because if you don't do it right, you come off as a crazy person because you're talking to yourself. And Sammy does it with "Careful, I've been hurt before." And then when he and Judy get back together later on, he has two that are genius. He says, she knows your name, he says to himself. And then he says, "Don't let go."
Yeah.
And it dropped me. And I can't tell you hard that is.
Yeah, he has one more when he's like, "I love you." And she turns around and is like, "What?"
And he goes right back to the song.
Yeah. But that song, you guys, I mean, we're jumping all over the place, but that song moment was so beautiful. And I forgot, I apologize to the universe that I forgot how pretty Judy's voice is.
Me too.
Yeah.
And she slays.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. And their harmonies. I mean, Sammy, we knew because Sam was an amazing singer and it was in an a cappella group. But the two of them together, their harmonies were just, I got goosebumps all over my body.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you something, Zachy.
Yes.
And I could see you wringing this one out as hard as you could. Was this Billy or you on Beakers?
Beakers. It's probably me.
you were wringing everything out of that.
I know. There's certain Beakers. Words that are just funny. Beakers. I think it was probably not in the script because that wouldn't probably have been funny on the page, but I was probably just riffing like words that sounded funny. And we should say it's the first appearance of Franklin, played by Masi Oka.
Yeah, I was about to say, Masi.
Oh.
Before he went on to be a time-traveling star of Heroes.
Right. He was the star of the show Heroes.
Yeah.
And I think this was his first juicy gig. He recurred as Franklin.
for a while.
He's very good.
Yeah, he was funny, hugging his favorite microscope so that you didn't destroy it.
and then at 8 minutes we go to what I referenced earlier, is Sarah and Donald. And it's what I started this whole thing off with however this ensemble gelled, whether it was just time or traveling together and getting into it, you guys are effortless.
All right, but let's go a little bit back, Johnny. You're going too fast. First of all, oh dear Lord, please tell me that's not a onesie.
Oh God.
And now Dr. Cox says, first of all, I'm wearing a onesie, which I love a onesie. I don't wear a onesie to bed, but man, when I have a onesie on, do I love a onesie. And I guess JD really loved one because he wears it to the bar with you, and then Cox pulls over the two ladies to flirt.
Okay, before you go past what I had.
Yeah, but that's at 11:28. I'm at eight.
I'm the onesie occurs at 7:06.
Oh, okay.
Now, but go ahead, Donald.
Minty. First of all, what were y'all drinking in your shots? If that was minty.
No, the toothbrush was minty.
Oh, still from the after you dipped it in the.
I don't know. It doesn't track. I guess you're right because the toothpaste would have been off of it. But
that
yeah,
shit was hilarious. Because and then right after that, yuck, yuck, yuck,
yeah,
yuck.
You know what I was thinking of? Do you remember? I don't know if you remember this, Donald, but Johnny, you definitely remember Easy Rider when Evan Nicholson would do a shot, he would just say a random word because the shot was so bad in Easy Rider. He'd do the shot and he'd go, ah! But he would say like a random word that would like help him recover from how bad the shot was. And that's what I was thinking of when I did it. I was like, yuck. Trying so hard to be manly in front of Cox, but I'm in a onesie with a toothbrush.
I thought it was funny when you go yucky and then the writers give Cox oh, great, I'm drinking with a Mouseketeer.
Like I said, I didn't remember this episode at all, so I never knew that you guys had a wingman situation going on, the two of you. What happened? I know that one girl blows it because she's talking about her ex-boyfriend. What happened to the girl you were talking to?
Well, I don't think Cox gives a flying fuck about the women. He's just like, here. Cox is like, here. You want a reason to stay here? Talk to these girls. I'm gonna go. And then JD is like, okay, now you're talking. And he tries to hit on that one woman, but she's just rambling.
The hangman's noose is hilarious.
Yeah, hilarious. It's kind of stolen from Airplane though.
It doesn't matter. Nobody remembers Airplane. It's absolutely hilarious.
Well, I remember Airplane, John.
I know, but we're dinosaurs.
No, but I think there's a scene, a moment in Airplane when someone's doing a long speech about their past and you cut back and the passenger next to him has hung himself and he's swinging. Anyway.
I think it's really interesting after the two girls leave and JD and Cox are alone. I don't remember Cox being that broken.
Yeah, he's
really
broken.
That's what I was going to say. He's so broken, dude. He's so broken.
Well, it's like once a year, Carla says, like once a year, he pretty much has a breakdown.
And I went back, as I told you guys, I keep composition books, and it's kind of how I learn my lines. And in the margins, I wrote notes to myself. And in that, I'll digress for a second. The first gig I got to get at NYU was to understudy John Turturro in Danny and the Deep Blue Sea. And over at Circle Rep, which was maybe, I lived on Sullivan Street and Circle was on Bleecker. So it was maybe a half a block from my house. And I understudied John and I was the assistant stage manager. So I helped call the lights and I made up the actors. But I had keys to the theater. And because it's just a two-hander means just two actors on stage. It was June Stein and John. And John went to do Desperately Seeking Susan after about 8 months. He wouldn't, it's eight shows a week off Broadway and he wouldn't go down. It's a very violent play. And so I had the keys to the theater. So every day I would walk and do circles on the stage because I had the keys and I would do both actors' parts out loud a couple of times a day. And this was all fear-based. And
Johnny, you were afraid that you might have to go on and you didn't want it. Yeah.
I was scared to death.
Yeah, I get it.
And John finally went to go do Desperately Seeking Susan, and which every actor in New York wanted to be in. And so I got to take over for him for about a week. And there's a line that Danny has at the end of the play where he says, everything hurts. And I worked backwards in that play from everything hurts. Mm. And and what that must mean for someone to actually say that, that everything hurts. And I gave it to Cox in this, that when we see him, there's that long profile shot of Cox that Will stays on, and everything hurts.
Yeah.
And it resonates, and it's nothing said, it's underneath, and Zaki's so lovely in the scene, but I just think the guy's broken.
Yeah.
And well, he's so incredibly committed to this job, which is endlessly frustrating for him. Not only what would be normal, dealing with so much death and pain, but that this hospital, this hospital that's, it seems, is barely surviving with its finances. And he opens the episode walking around, and I noticed that Will made sure that the ceiling panels were all fucked up. I don't know if you noticed that, but when you're looking around being like, everything is here is fucking broken, I'm so sick of it. And in that very walk and talk moment, you're seeing like the ceiling's all fucked up, and he's just so frustrated, I imagine, with trying to save lives with no support, with no gear. Like so many, by the way, like so many doctors and nurses and people must be feeling now with the lack of PPE they had with COVID.
I think it's really interesting at what you were just referencing, that the writers don't even have Cox reference it as the hospital or the name of the hospital. He just calls it that place. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even want it in his mouth. And he says, I can't go back to that place.
Yeah. And then JD at least feels like, wow, I don't know what to do. He broke down. What are we going to do? And Carla's like, oh no, he just does that once a year. He'll be fine today. And I'm like, there's no way he's going to be fine. And you come in like, hey,
what? This is going to be a great day.
I stole that from a brother of my brother's friend, Chip Humphrey, who lives in Atlanta now. He used to always go around and go, it's a great day. I'm like, I put that one right in my back pocket.
You were so funny. All right, wait.
All right, let's go to break.
We're going to take a break. We always forget because we're having so much fun. We'll be right back.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com. JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience owning them is a great one.
Always packing the most functionality and fun into every product at a truly accessible price.
Zach, let me tell you, JLab has these new luxury over-ear headphones called the JBuds Lux ANC.
Yep.
These seamlessly blend innovation and lab quality sound, all in these sleek headphones that guarantee an elevated listening experience. You can connect to multiple devices, customize your sound in the JLab app, and get over 70 hours of playtime.
Well, buddy, those sound pretty cool, but have you heard of the JBuds ANC3? They are the smallest smart active noise canceling true wireless earbuds you can find. You can also connect to multiple devices, but these come with a built-in USB-C charging cable and a noise canceling microphone for crisp, clear phone calls. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit JLab.com to find your kind of tech.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know that feeling when you just have something you need to get off your chest? It's like a rain cloud following you around in your life.
People all carry around different stressors, big and small. Everyone has stress, but we all handle it differently.
When you keep your emotions bottled up, it can start to affect you negatively.
Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down.
We talk all the time about how much therapy has benefited us.
Therapy isn't just for those who have experienced a major life trauma. Therapy can help everyone with daily challenges with friends, family, and other relationships.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, you should start with BetterHelp.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/realfriends today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/realfriends.
And we're back! See, Donald, you're giving the people what they want, which is the
They asked for it, so I might as well give it to them, man.
A lot of chatter on, we got to just digress for a moment. So much chatter on Instagram about the washcloth conversation.
Well, that was a conversation that was real deal, Holyfield, man.
Johnny, do you use a washcloth in the shower? We need
my
to know.
My wife wanted to make sure that before we get into Johnny using the washcloth, she wanted you guys all to know that, yes, you are supposed to get rid of the washcloth after
each
you
shower.
Use it that one time.
Right.
Period.
But you don't.
I do. My wife wanted me to.
You don't. You don't. Your wife was like, you better fucking tell them we changed the washcloth. There are too many fucking people listening to this podcast, Donald. You better tell them we changed the washcloth.
No. I'm telling you right now, we changed the washcloth, baby. I told everybody.
Baby, see, I told everybody,
care.
Baby.
It's taken care of. It's not like she listens to the show anyway.
If you want, we can have Dan go back and re-edit that sentence into the original washcloth debate.
It's out there.
Jesus, that was funny.
Well, I just want you to know that, you know, in that episode, we were talking about both what kind of merch we should have and the washcloth debate. And so now my whole Instagram feed was like, how about merch that says Team Washcloth on a washcloth?
I love it. I love
that destroyed.
Also, somebody said, and now look, man. If you know me, this is how I am. But listen, I accumulate a lot of spit in my mouth when I talk.
Uh-oh.
So sometimes I might when I'm talking.
Right.
Listen, asshole.
Uh-oh.
That's how I talk. All right. Accept it. I just did it again. And if you got a problem with it,
right,
you can kiss my ass.
All right.
Which, of course, for avid listeners, begs the question: which instructor did Donald have today?
I know. Yes.
Because he just went into aggressive guy.
You're right, Johnny. Good call. You know,
I need to protect how I sound on this thing. Everybody had a problem with me saying, you know what I mean, and now somebody's talking about the way I slurp when I'm done with my sentences.
Slurp. By the way, slurp. By the way, you know, they have those fancy spit guards for the mic we could get you, right, Dan? We could, you know, it's like a little circle that goes in front of the mic so you don't have to be spitting all over
it. I'm in my house. I don't need to do any of that.
All right. Well, why don't you reach behind you and dab your mouth with some sweatpants?
Sweatpants. Fuck you, dude. Fuck you.
Anyway, it's just fun to see that so many people are engaging, and we love to hear from you, especially when it's debating things we're debating here, because I love seeing people weigh in and be like, I'm Team Washcloth, and I'm from the South.
I was about to say, right. Well, a lot of white people that got on the thing
yeah.
were like, yo, I do use a washcloth, but I am from the South. So. Right.
And then someone wrote me like, Zach, you can put a loofah between your cheeks. You just have to make sure you wash it. They're washable. And I'm still not going to put a scratchy loofah between my cheeks.
Johnny, are you team washcloth or team no washcloth?
It's funny. I use washcloths at hotels.
But not at home.
Well, I just surf. I just, there's a shower I put in outside the building. And I just shower out there. And so, no, there's no washcloths out there.
Yeah.
But in hotels, you use the washcloths.
You know why he does? You know why he does? Because he doesn't have to worry about cleaning that fucking poo stain up.
That also is a problem for me, Zach. I have a problem with your poo stain story now.
Why?
Dude.
You're rehashing some shit right now. No pun intended.
Do you have itchy butt all day? Hold on. Do you have itchy butt all the time?
No, you still don't understand what I'm saying.
There's no way, dude. I do understand what you're saying.
I don't have poo. If I were to swipe the washcloth down the outside of my balloon knot, there'd be no poo on it. But if I were to dig a quarter inch, there'd be some remnants.
Why are you digging in your ass?
Because that's what I feel the purpose of the washcloth is. I have a washcloth as my interface between me and my rectum, and I can dig a little. I can be aggressive. Check my prostate while I'm in there.
Do you guys not have the magic toilet seat that does the spray?
Oh, I wish I had a bidet. Lucky.
I'm
going to
get you one of those,
Donald.
Oh, it's a seat. It's a seat you put on your
toilet. No, it's a seat. It's not even a bidet. It's the most genius thing on the planet.
Yeah.
We got them at the design center at some invited event that we went to.
Yeah, yeah. It just blasts a little. It's like a water pick for your anus.
Oh, it's the single greatest gift on the planet.
That's lovely. Donald, I'm going to get you one for Hanukkah.
Can't wait.
Well, what you have to get them with is you also get a contractor to extend a water outlet and electricity to it.
Well, that's not coming with my Hanukkah. Well, maybe that'll be the second night. The first night will be the water pick for Uranus. Second night contractor.
Could we get back to Laverne?
Why are we doing it?
Welcome back.
Welcome back,
Johnny.
Welcome back to the show, guys.
Johnny, this is what happens. When you're here, I love that Johnny's already here being like, can we get back to the episode?
Right,
which is what I'm the one who's always saying that
We've tried to digress several times, and Johnny's like, but you know when 6:02.
I wanted it, yeah. All right, let's talk about it.
I thought in 12:52, I thought Billy likes to take a swipe at Zachy every once in a while. He always has.
What did
Laverne says, "You think so with those ears?"
Yeah.
And Zachy goes
so fucked
totally
up.
Uncalled for.
So fucked up. I must have done something that week that he wanted to take me down a notch for.
100%.
I never really had my ears dissed before. I mean, obviously I have a large nose and I'm used, you know, anytime a caricature artist would draw me, it would be like 95% nose. So I'm used to that. But I never really had my ears dissed before Nurse Roberts went after them.
Yeah, she took no small amount of pleasure in doing it, too.
No. Red Dawn, 1540. I've never seen Red Dawn. I don't know anything about Red Dawn.
Are you fucking kidding me right now? You've never seen Red Dawn?
No.
Johnny, did you audition for Red Dawn?
No, I wasn't up to that speed yet.
Well, there's a part in that. Well, you're probably way too young.
I have no idea what Wolverines means. Please tell us.
Okay, so the Russians in Red Dawn.
Yeah.
Attack America.
Yeah, Colorado. Our trivia friend says there's a mistake in the episode. One of you guys says Michigan, but it's actually Colorado.
Yeah, because Michigan are the Wolverines. The college team Michigan are the Wolverines, but it actually takes place in Colorado. You're right.
There you go.
And they attack and. Kids, students, are the rebellion. They wind up being, like, all the adults are gathered and put into concentration camps. And kids,
yeah, Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, C. Thomas Howell, Charlie Sheen.
Does it hold up?
I mean, they tried to remake it and stuff like that. The action is amazing. Who's the older brother? Oh, my gosh, Ghost.
Well, Patrick Swayze is the hero.
Yeah. Just so many people are in it.
Right.
This is the first movie that Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze did together. This is before Dirty Dancing.
And Leah Thompson?
Leah Thompson's in it also.
What a cast.
A lot of people went on to do
good group
other
of young
things.
Actors.
Yeah,
it makes me think of another, before you explain it more, Taps. We were talking about Taps the other day. Do you guys remember that
movie?
Bunch
of good actors.
Yeah.
A lot of genius.
At Valley Forge Military Academy.
Yeah, and a lot of amazing actors. It was their first big thing.
Sean and
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Yep.
But anyway, go back to the plot of Wolverine. So the kids fight back.
The kids and the school that the kids, they're all like on the football team and stuff like that. And the football team of the school is called the Wolverines. And so when they're in the fight with the Russians, their victory cry is Wolverines. Their battle cry is Wolverines. Like if you know G.I. Joe was Yo Joe, theirs was Wolverines.
Right. Okay, got it. And in the world of Scrubs, Elliot knows this movie. I don't believe it, but I believe Turk knows it. I don't believe
Elliot. Well, Turk would know it, so therefore JD would know it.
Right, but Elliot walks in like, oh, I forget the homework assignment. Let's watch Red Dawn. I'm like, come on, buddy.
I'd love
to. Yeah, but it's also great. Again, you guys both throw the gesture away, and it's great when Zachy comes in and goes, yeah, Wolverines. And he just throws it away, and Sarah does too, and it's great.
You know,
when I was first
watching this episode, before I got through it, I was like, what a dick Turk is for inviting my newly ex-girlfriend over to do a homework assignment at the fucking living room table.
But he knew it had to be done.
Yeah, well, but then he comes correct. There's a great thing later on at 10:45 that Donald does this great thing where Sarah goes, "You and I can still hang out." And Donald goes, "No, he's my best friend. Either you fix it or," and then there's an ellipsis. And for all of us who have had divorced friends or friends who have broken up, it's the way Donald lays it out. You can't have both. It's never, you got to be friends with either the husband or the wife. You can't have both. It doesn't work.
People always choose a side, don't they?
100%. You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no in between. You can't stay in between. You can't be like, "She's my friend and you're my friend."
Right. It doesn't work that way. Right. I got it. Now, what we learned is that Turk did it in order to try and get them to be friends again.
Right. Well,
I think his intentions are really good.
But it's so raw. I mean, it's still so new, this breakup, you know? It's like...
But you guys are running into each other. Elliot and JD are running into each other every day at work. And there's all of this animosity towards each other.
Yeah, it's how the show opens up.
I felt sad about it. You know, I have to say, I guess I'm, these old feelings of being so invested in these characters came up. And of course, I'm sure... you know, memories of times in my own life of this stage of a relationship. And
sure.
I don't know. I was so invested that I genuinely was feeling sad for these two characters and how they clearly love each other so much. And as we learn in the series, they ultimately choose each other, but that awkwardness of trying to be friends and having mutual friends and working together. I mean, what a nightmare.
Yeah, but what you just said pays off in the final, before you guys go up on the roof and throw watermelons. When you guys are on that cot, your truth is that it made you genuinely sad, and it resonates. It absolutely jumps into the lens, and it resonates, and it's so lovely.
I think I had
nothing,
so much.
There's nothing demonstrative. There's nothing showy. It's just this guy's sad, and sad sucks sometimes.
I think that was easy to play because it was real. And I think I had so much love for Sarah, and I just, you know, I could just play in my heart that we weren't going to be friends anymore. And it was just easy to tap into, you know?
Right. I hear you.
It showed.
It was very good. I really, you know, when in the beginning of the episode, when JD says, "My teacher died," I was like, "Oh, this is going to be the problem of the episode." And then when, you know, Johnny, when Cox goes into this rant, I was like, "No, this is the problem of the episode." And then how you bring it full circle. It's always brought back to one, right? And with our show. So at the end of it all, you remind him, "Didn't you tell me about your teacher that, you know, just passed away? How are you going to deal with that? Because I know you're trying to hide it. What did you do when you found out your teacher died? Oh, that's right. You made a joke." That shit stings inside. And if you hold on to it and if you don't have an outlet, you wind up doing what I did. You know what I mean? And there's not a bunch of people at this hospital that are going to protect you the way they protect me. That's the honest to goodness truth.
Yeah, that
so
was,
get this shit out. You know what
I
mean?
That was well said. I believe that too. I mean, I feel like I do that in life. I try and dissipate the emotion by making a joke. And then you're all, you know, which is fine. It's a coping mechanism. But then you're letting that shit fester and build up.
Yeah.
And then Johnny and Cox is saying, like, look what happens if you let it build for 364 days. You fucking destroy Franklin's lab.
And I wrote in my notebook because I'd had about a 20 year art crush on a Welsh poet named Dylan Thomas. And I didn't have the spine to go down to the writer's room and ask Billy if I could put this in, but I did put it in the margins. The poem that "Do Not Go Gently Into That Good Night, Rage, Rage Against the Dying of the Light." And that informs everything I'm telling Zaki in that scene, that you don't go gently into the good night. Rage, rage, rage against the dying of the light. Oh, I got to chill. And I wanted to say it to Zaki so bad, but it was a little too esoteric. But it's underneath
and
there.
And you didn't need to, John, because it was underneath your whole performance.
It floats it. And if you can get Dylan Thomas to float something underneath what you're doing, again, you're not lying. You're telling your truth.
Yeah. I really like that you do that, John, the putting putting thoughts and inspiration in the margins and letting that sort of exist underneath the scene. I think that's really a smart technique.
It's completely selfish and self-serving. It helps me. Mm. I always find that if you can, since we're lying in front of the lens, everything's, most of it's a lie. In other words, I'm not Dr. Cox. I'm not the guy. I'm not Sergeant O'Neill in platoon.
Right.
I'm not. I'm some guy. I'm just an Irish jackass. And
with if a
baseball
field.
if you can reduce the frequency of the lie, whether it's Oliver putting us through 2 weeks of boot camp or putting Dylan Thomas underneath a particular beat, that reduces the lie. And if you can reduce the lie to a certain frequency, then the lens doesn't suffer it as a lie quite as much.
Right. And I think genuinely, this might be a non sequitur, but for me, genuinely listen, you know, a lot of times actors will ask me for, and I'm sure this, you guys get this as well. Young actors ask you for advice or, and you try and think of like something succinct you can say, because it's none of it's that easy. But when I do try and say the most basic thing that I've learned is genuinely listening. If the camera's on me and Johnny C playing Cox is saying all these things to me and I can genuinely listen, I'm not looking in my periphery at the camera. I'm not looking at the gel on the light that's about to fall. I'm not distracted by something. I'm genuinely listening. Then I can't help but react naturally as a human being would. Now that's not easy to do. I can only do it in spurts, which hopefully those spurts can be edited together into something good. But that's sort of my version of what you're saying is being as present as you can and genuinely listening.
Because you're telling the truth.
Yeah. And then we react. I remember when I did this movie, The Last Kiss, and I had a scene with Tom Wilkinson, a wonderful actor, and it was one of those moments where this really worked for me. The cameras were kind of far back. I love that when on the occasion when they can be sort of a little bit far away on longer lenses. And
he's God,
a,
me too.
And he was just on the porch and he's giving me a speech about his daughter. And I just remember being so present. I didn't see the cameras. I just saw this man talking to me and giving me advice about how to deal with my troubled relationship. And I just felt – I was so in the moment that in spurts, I was able to just forget that it wasn't real. You know what I mean?
No, I totally know what you mean. When I did G's Tripping, I got stoned with my boy Dion right before a scene.
When I was in Homie Spumoni.
Oh.
And there was you know, we were at a dance at a house party. And I was supposed to be dancing with this girl at the house party, and I was so stoned that I forgot we were filming the damn movie. You think this is bullshit, but I remembered my direction was...
I thought you were... By the way, I just want to stop for a second. I thought you were kidding, and it was hilarious, but you're serious. You got so high you forgot you were doing a movie?
I forgot that we were making... This is how fucking...
I got to see this movie now.
So we're in a scene, and we're, you know, it's a house party... And we're dancing, and I'm dancing with this girl, and I remembered my direction. My direction is tell her to come with you, and you guys exit. So we're dancing and everything, and now I'm really fucking in it. I'm looking around at my boys and shit. You know what I mean? I'm waving to my boy, you know what I mean, in the movie and everything like that. And I remembered, I'm supposed to tell her something. So I whispered in her ear like, yo, let's go to the other room. And she goes... Okay, let's go. And so we're exiting, and as I'm walking out, I'm like, oh, shit, I just pulled that. Check out what I did. You know what I mean? And I'm looking at my boys like, yeah, look how I did it. And then they said, cut. And I was like, holy shit. No, I didn't, but, you know, I didn't go like, oh, we're making a movie, but it was like, cut. And we walked away. My boy was like, yo, it really looked like you was taking her to the other room.
Oh my God.
That's so funny, man.
So that worked for me.
I would get hives if I ever found myself in that situation. I would worry too much.
How often were you stoned while acting on Scrubs? What percentage of the time?
It's not as high.
We gotta add it to the Scrubs wiki.
It's not as high as everybody, you know, as I made it out to be.
Right.
But there were times where I came to work and I was like, fuck.
Too big.
I did it in the morning.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, I'll be fine. Dude, I had a problem.
You know, it'd be funny if on the Scrubs Wiki with each episode, it has a little section where it says how high Donald was during the filming of this episode.
You know,
and it has like a red for very. There's like a color system, like how dangerous the water is at the beach.
those days are over, though. Those days are over. But I do remember. I remember thinking, you know, there's so many actors that are baked when they're working, and I'm sure there are. You know what I mean? But it really wasn't for me.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to get us back on track here at 8:06.
Johnny, if Johnny was always on the show, we'd be much more on track.
Let me tell you something. The Todd shows up in 8:06.
Hilarious.
And he comes up from behind the couch, and it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
It's a little creepy.
The things he says to her are creepy,
It's
too.
A little creepy.
I know, but I laughed out loud when he said, when he goes,
So is it safe to assume, Donald, that at 8:56, when you do a very graceful jump up onto the nurse's station, that you are not, in fact, wearing silk boxers?
I am definitely not wearing silk boxers.
Do you wear anything under your scrubs?
I did at the time because I was – look, man.
He has
I got
to.
A leaky,
he
I, has got a, to. I got a leaky O-ring, and so
oh,
sometimes –
yeah, loose gasket. You know, He's got a loose gasket.
Know, sometimes when you go to the bathroom and you come back and you got a little pee spot, it's embarrassing. So,
but I don't think that you could – I mean, I don't think that it would be appropriate for you to not have your situation contained.
I'm sure there were people that put on their scrubs at as Johnny's hand goes up.
Oh, really? Johnny, you freeball in your scrubs?
I do. One time in the Philippines, we were shooting a flick, and during boot camp, I had to go through a river is called a blue. And so we had to go through a blue and hold our weapons above our heads. And then we got out the other side. I took my fatigues off, and I had about 9 leeches right near my power source.
And then
Daiwee, our commandant, told us that they like warm, wet places, like under your arms and down in your crotch. And I haven't worn underwear since 1986.
Wow. And that's all it took. And that is all it took.
You can't preface it with that's all. That's what it took. Wow. 7 leeches. 7 leeches near my power source. I'm not no chance, Lance.
And how do you pull them off? Can you just pull a leech off? I've never had a leech stuck to
Dale,
my bun.
Dale came and he used like a cigarette butt and like he'd burn them and pull them at the same time.
Oh,
and
gosh.
It was very humiliating to take my, you know, to have all 24 guys looking at, you know, the Irish donkey with
oh,
7 leeches.
Yes. Wow.
I'm not getting any leeches near my
I guess jeans sword. Would be fine, but scrubs wouldn't work.
No, gross. Even jeans. Oh, man, I couldn't do it with my jeans.
Hmm.
Too much chafing.
All right, should we get back to the episode, guys?
Are you boxers or tidy? What do you guys?
I'm straight up boxers, dude.
Yeah.
Tidy whities can't happen no more.
No, I don't do tidy whities, but they're not boxers like traditional boxers. Mine are sort of like clingy, tight, soft boxers.
Okay.
They're Stance. If I highly recommend this brand, Stance. They're not a paid sponsor, but I'm giving them a
Stance
shout out.
Oh, Stance like the socks. Stance.
Yes, they make really fun socks, but they also make this like butter. It's called like Butter Undies.
Butter Undies by Stance.
Yeah, there you go. There's a shout out for Butter Undies. Send Donald an XXXL, every Stance folks.
I don't need an extra. My waist isn't that big, dude.
Oh, quadruple X?
Wow.
We got to get back to Kenny and Judy because we haven't given them their due.
Okay.
Because the song he turns off is in fact the song that then Sammy and Judy sing together a cappella.
Yeah. Yeah, beautifully, yeah. So pretty, so pretty.
That's so tough to do. Also, I guess it was, you know,
they must have practiced a lot.
They had to have practiced that because that's so like even the way lock. The cadence and everything was on fire. You know what I mean? That had to. They had to.
I just
want to
remind everyone who's listening what the song was. It was
"Talk Dirty to Me."
Oh, "Talk Dirty to Me." Yeah, by Poison.
But they're not. I'm beating a dead horse here. But the two of them are. They're not showing off. They're not putting it up on a bill. They're not putting it up on a billboard. Right. They're so great. They're so graceful, and they're not doing, can you believe this shit? Because Sammy never does that, and Judy is the master of just navigating her way through a scene. And the two of them together are so money, and that thing is just so lovely. And then when Sammy says, I love you, I dropped.
Yeah.
He was so good on this episode.
It really made me miss him.
Me too.
I had just one of those moments of going, fucking hell, gone too soon. This guy is so funny and so talented. And I just wish more people got to know how talented he was. I mean, he was a successful working actor, but I watch him in this and I go, I wish everyone in the world knew how genius this guy was.
His abilities, man. He just had so many great abilities. You know what I mean? He could make you laugh, no problem.
Did you guys, at the end of the show, actually get to throw things off the roof?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I don't remember any of that.
Because I could see that being a kind of a nightmare with 120 people on a crew.
It also dates the show with Letterman, talking about you want to throw stuff off the roof like Letterman?
Yeah.
It's like Letterman hasn't been on for, 10 years now?
Well, for those of you who are too young to or didn't ever watch Letterman, he would often throw large objects off the roof of the Ed Sullivan Theater. And
was this before he moved to CBS?
No, I think it was a bit he did for his whole thing. I don't remember. Yeah,
I don't remember.
But I think we did. I have a weird memory of feeling like it was kind of dangerous. It's probably something they wouldn't let us do today with all the with the increase in set safety, because the wall of that roof wasn't incredibly high, and we were hurling watermelons over the side.
Absolutely.
I don't know that would be approved by HR this day and age.
By the way, my Bill Cosby, that made me laugh out loud. I think it made me laugh because of how bad my Bill Cosby
was. Yeah, it was like it was turned up to 11.
it was turned up to 11.
I thought it was hilarious.
It was almost like you were doing an impression of Eddie Murphy doing his impression.
Yeah.
Now, crazy. Why pudding? I didn't even, that was such a non sequitur. Like, we put pudding in medical gloves?
Yeah, and then tossed them off the roof.
Yeah, and then you went into a...
the pudding!
I wonder if that was in the script. Do you think that was in the script, or you just riffed that?
No, that was definitely in the script. If we threw pudding off the roof, they definitely put it in the show.
I would like to talk to you about... About some of the things you've been doing in your show.
About some of the things that you do in your show. Stop. Now.
and then Neil at the end saying, horror.
Yeah. Apocalypse Now, right? I think that was the, I learned from Scrubs Wiki, that was the first time Neil's ever been alone in a scene.
Really?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's Scrubs neat. Wiki, they really have...
he gets... Billy puts him alone more and more as the... him building that squirrel thing in his garage, and...
I think he gets
more and more alone.
Yeah, and I think that this was a shift in Neil. Like, I think he entered the world of a regular cast member around here, and...
there is an episode where Neil's not going to be on this show in the first season. And that's how they got around him not being a regular. If I recall correctly, let's ask Bill. Sucks. We can ask Bill now.
Oh, that's a good ask Bill. Go ahead, Donald. Ask Bill.
If my memory serves me correctly, isn't there an episode where there's no janitor?
And if so, was that related to tiptoeing around his contract because he would have had to have been a regular of some sort? Do not say 5678, Bill.
We'll shut it down.
Neil Flynn did not have to test for the part of the janitor, so he was not listed as a regular. You know, I just cast him as a guest star in the pilot with the intention of putting him in every episode. And then we did put him in every episode as a recur guy, and at the very end made him I was able to convince the networks, they liked him a lot, that we needed to pay to make him a regular the second year. Originally, they only wanted him in a maximum of 4 episodes. But I was like, 4? You got to have him in 5, 6, 7, 8.
No.
Stop it, Stan. Turn it the fuck off. This fucking guy.
Let's take a break.
We'll be right back after these fine words.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com. JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience owning them is a great one.
Always packing the most functionality and fun into every product at a truly accessible price.
Zach, let me tell you, JLab has these new luxury over-ear headphones called the JBuds Lux ANC.
Yep.
These seamlessly blend innovation and lab quality sound, all in these sleek headphones that guarantee an elevated listening experience. You can connect to multiple devices, customize your sound in the JLab app, and get over 70 hours of playtime.
Well, buddy, those sound pretty cool, but have you heard of the JBuds ANC3? They are the smallest smart active noise canceling true wireless earbuds you can find. You can also connect to multiple devices, but these come with a built-in USB-C charging cable and a noise canceling microphone for crisp, clear phone calls. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit JLab.com to find your kind of tech.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card.
You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases,
and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval terms. Apply.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hi, hi, hi. We're back in.
Hello.
Aloha.
We're back in.
Hi, Jeremy.
After a quick pee break, we're back. Joelle, introduce us.
It's Jeremy Lee.
Nailed it.
There's our Jeremy. You got the Oprah introduction. It's a sacred rite that only
Jeremy, are you in an office?
I'm in my home office right now. Yeah.
Well,
it
Jeremy.
It looks like a office building.
Okay, Oprah, can you chill for 2 seconds? Jeremy.
I will do that, Zach Braff.
Oh, my God. You get a car. Jeremy, tell us, you have a special day to be on the podcast because the legendary, the living legend, Johnny C. McGinley has joined us. So who do you have a question for three of the cast members of the TV show Scrubs?
I do have a question. If I don't mind, just a quick background. I work with children with autism. And so we actually did research at my wonderful company and nonprofit Autism Partnership Foundation to research if we could change a kid with autism to like social things, not just toys or food. And so we actually stole from an episode that you guys did and got children to actually enjoy the social aspect of that instead of their favorite toy. So I guess my first question is,
wow.
Yeah, and it's published in a journal, so you can go look at it. Hungry Chicken.
Right on.
That's incredible. Journals. Good for you.
So I guess my right first on. Question is, who came up with the Hungry Chicken? Because we use it all the time.
Wow, I don't know. I think that's Bill Lawrence that came up with one of the writers, right? Am I right, guys?
Oh, God. If you throw this to Billy, he's going to do a 5, 6, 7, 8 again.
You know, we got to limit him. He doesn't get too many. That is a good question. I have no idea. I think it must have been one of the writers. I don't know.
Yeah, we got to throw it to Bill. I'm sorry.
So wait, just explain a little bit more. The children who have autism, you say they would rather interact with a toy, and you use this to give them a way to interact without having a toy involved?
Yeah. People think like children with autism only like toys or only want food, and they only use that to motivate them. But we know we can motivate them socially too, because they need to be social, and it's a social disorder. So we would take the Hungry Chicken and we would do it with a friend of theirs, and then see if after we did it with them, they would pick that or favorite or their favorite toy. And so we were able to show, like, by really selling it and really doing a lot of Hungry Chicken, that they would pick a social motivator instead of like food or M&Ms, which is
right on.
Better, that's healthier. It's great. Yeah,
that's amazing. Well, now I really wish I could take credit for inventing that, because that's a very inspiring story. Wow. Do you have another question for us?
Yeah, I guess I do. So you've talked a little bit about the music on the show, and I just think the music on the show is great. And Zach, just to say, I think the Garden State soundtrack is one of the best soundtracks ever.
Thank you.
It's a mixtape. Hold on. It's a mixtape.
It's a mixtape I won a Grammy for.
You won a mixtape Grammy.
I didn't even know they had a mixtape Grammy, but it turns out they do.
And you won that shit, big dog.
I did. Okay. You've held it.
I have held it.
I got the fucking first award in my EGOT. I didn't think it was gonna be my first. I thought it might be my last.
Right. When you get the EGOT, you already got the Grammy.
Right. I thought I was gonna have to do like a book on tape.
Jeremy, do you know what an EGOT is?
Grammy, Oscar, Tony.
Yes, sir.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah. I Donald ruined my praise from you, and I want to thank you. It was shocking to everyone involved that soundtrack was so successful, but I really appreciate it.
It really is a good soundtrack, though.
Do you guys just like already have a song in mind? You know when that episode comes, or? Do you listen to a song and you know, oh, that'll be a great song to add to a soundtrack one day?
I think what happens is there were some writers that were involved. There was, of course, Krista Miller, who plays Jordan and is Bill's wife. Right. And she's very, very into it and very good at it. And Bill, and then the editors. And then I think what happens is this is the way I do it for my films as well. You sort of build a big ass playlist of potential songs. You feel like, oh, these would be great for a montage, or ooh, this is a really moving song for somewhere. You don't really know. And then when you get in the edit, you start to go, let's try that song. And then you see. And I always jokingly have a goosebump detector. You can listen to 25 songs and they're like, okay, that's okay. And then all of a sudden you watch it and you just get goosebumps up and down your arm and you go, okay, well, that's obviously a contender. And that's a lot of trial and error, And these days it's even harder because so many people are doing it that when I made my film Wish I Was Here, we would try it and we'd fall in love with the song. And then we'd look up online and it's like, oh no, it's been used in Grey's Anatomy. It's been used on this. It's been used in this movie. So it's even harder now because you got to find music that hasn't been done to death in being used in with film.
Oh, wow. I mean, you guys,
I think a really good example of that is Joshy, is your friend Joshy, and the different music he brought to the show, Zachy, was just astonishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Joshua Radin is an artist that we love a lot. And Johnny, I don't even know if you know this trivia, that his song Winter, which is in that famous episode where we lose Brendan Fraser, was the first song he'd ever written.
Wow.
Thank goodness he wasn't a one-hit wonder, dude.
Well, this Thank many goodness. Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. This many and years
I
lo- later.
I loved his cover on Alex Inc. that first episode. Just
Of Bob Dylan. Thank you. You're the guy that was watching Alex Inc. Thank you so much.
My wife and I, who's really sad she couldn't be here, but she's actually a second year resident. So she's off at the hospital.
Oh wow.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being such a fan of all things Scrubs and Alex Inc. and Garden State. I really appreciate that.
And all you guys. You guys are amazing.
Man, you don't even know my name. That was Jeremy!
No, we were just watching Can't Hardly Wait. My wife is not from America. We were watching Can't Hardly Wait.
Go on.
Never seen it. And I forgot you were in it.
Oh my gosh, that's the best way to... That's great. It was going right. And then you were like,
I turned to my wife and I was like, did you remember that Taye Diggs is in this movie? All right, Jeremy.
Give it up. Thunderous applause, Dan, for Jeremy Lee.
Jeremy, stay safe and keep doing the beautiful work you're doing with autistic children. And thank you so much for the kind words.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.
Well, guys, I think we did it. We've gone long. The people seem to love it. Whenever I say, I've gotten a lot of chatter on my Insta saying, stop saying you've gone too long. We don't want you guys to stop. But we want to, you know, I had a great acting teacher who used to say, give them 10 minutes less than they want.
Was this great acting teacher that you have ever on Scrubs?
Yes. By the way, did you know that?
Dude, come on, man.
I thought you may have forgotten with your stoner brain.
Who was your acting teacher and who did he or she play on Scrubs?
I had the privilege to work with Zach's acting teacher the
David
whole
Downs.
Episode.
Yeah.
David Downs. I worked
And who
with
did him. David play?
He played the one whose kid was in a coma or broke his I don't remember who
I directed the episode. This wasn't the epic Heather Graham one, was it?
No, it wasn't. It was like he broke his son either broke his back or I forget what it was, but you know, he asked me to be honest with him.
Right.
And he was like his one line, I remember the part of the interaction we had, he said to me, "Do you shave your head because it's cool or because you're bald?" And I go, "Bald."
Yeah. It was a really good episode. We'll have to figure out what it was. But yeah, David Downs was my acting teacher at Northwestern and
I'll be darned.
Also a beautiful actor. And so I had him do a guest star on Scrubs.
Yes.
I always feel like one of the great gifts of being
Mr.
on
Bulger. Sorry. Mr. Bulger.
Either a hit show or producing a movie is throwing talented friends, not just random friends, talented friends, putting them on your piece. And I did it with a half a dozen actors on Scrubs. And then if people are right, I do it all the time with the movies I'm producing too.
Yeah.
You have some very talented friends.
Yeah. You've got quite a posse of, sorry, I just don't interrupt. I know what it was, why it was special. It was the Wizard of Oz episode. Joel is telling us in the chat. It was Mr. Bulger.
And his son was brain dead.
Season 5, episode 7, if you're listening and are curious. It was that epic Wizard of Oz episode.
But Johnny, you have a lot.
Mr. Bulger would be an homage to Ray Bulger in the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, sir, it would be. Now, Johnny,
you have a lot of friends that like are almost like mentors to me, like Eric LaSalle, Michael Beach. These are people that you've known
Cusack
30 years.
Yeah, since you like out of college, or you went to college with a lot of these guys.
Eric and I went to college together.
Right.
And he's my guy.
Yeah.
Johnny,
these guys are like, you know, mentors to me. Like, you know, when I was a young actor, Michael Beach was one of the people when I was doing Waiting to Exhale that was like, well, this is what you need to do if you want to be successful. Stop smoking that damn cigarette that you're holding on to. Like, I was smoking cigarettes like, I want to be a movie star. Smoking a cigarette at a table read. He was like, yo, you want to be a movie star? Put the fucking cigarette down, dude.
Mike is no lie.
Straight up.
Johnny, I remember I was thinking the other day, you were on a movie, a big movie. The one that took place at the motel with Cusack and All at Night.
Oh, Identity. Jim Mangold directed.
Identity. And it's a really good movie I recommend to you. I liked it a lot. But I was...
Good cast.
I remember you said you want to come visit the set because the set was really cool. Even though it looks like it's all outside, it was all in a giant soundstage.
It sure was.
And it was all pissing rain the whole time. And you said you got to come see this set. It's really cool. And I was like, I can't believe I'm allowed to. And I came to visit you one day on set, and it was just so cool. And I thought of that because I know a bunch of your buddies. You know, it feels like you and your posse often cast each other in each other's films.
I think if your posse's talented, I mean, there's some outliers, but. then yeah, good on you. It's gonna make life easier.
I like that too. I like to use the same people over and over again.
But
well.
You didn't use Donald in Garden State.
Oh Jesus!
Yeah,
here
thank
we
you,
go.
Johnny. Thank you, Johnny.
Oh God.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you very very much.
God.
Like Oliver Stone used John C. McGinley in
so many times.
Ever made. You would think that Zach Braff would take a hit. You know what I mean? Like. You know,
I want you to be the Johnny C. McGinley to my Oliver Stone.
You say that now, but I don't think.
How many movies did you do with him, John?
Six.
Wow, that's incredible.
Sheesh.
And there's six of the best.
Yeah, he.
What about talk radio? I was thinking about you in talk radio the other day. I was thinking about you. in Seven. For those of you who don't remember, Johnny's in one of my favorite movies, Seven.
I love
take
that
the
movie.
Shot. Take the shot.
And then Johnny, you go, I don't know if you improv. Did you improv this when you go, somebody call somebody?
I did improv that.
That was incredible. He's in the chopper right when the shit goes down with the what's in the box? What's in the box? And then
David gave us as much rope as we wanted to hang ourselves with. He lets the actors run and then he'll chop it together in post, but he lets you run.
There were two scenes. So you're in the chopper, but you're also in when they bum rush the room too, right?
Yeah, with the
emaciated guy.
Yeah. Oh. But I'll never forget. I remember getting goosebumps when this is before I even knew you, Johnny, and you go, "Oh my God, somebody call somebody!" And I was like, "That's such a good line."
With the emaciated guy, David found out there was asbestos in that building, and he wasn't down with it. So we shut down for a while and found another building, and that was a whole to do. That was a complete clusterfuck when he found out there was asbestos in that building.
You have budget when they're like, "There's asbestos in the building. We're shutting down." Like, I've never been on a movie that had that power. But again, I'm no Fincher. Man, I love Fincher, and man, I love that movie. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, everybody shines in that movie.
What's in the box? On that note, we love you all for listening. Keep chatting us on Insta. You make us laugh. And if you have a question, scrubsiheart@gmail.com. Joelle will decide if your question is worthy for air. Right, Joelle? Joelle yields all the power. Don't yell at me and Donald. We don't do anything.
Joelle, a lot of people like the fact that we talk Star Wars, too. I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah. I saw that too.
I've been getting a lot of DMs. Donald,
I'm just saying,
us maybe doing a Star Wars show.
There was
we
a
might
lot
need
of
to make that happen.
There was a lot of talk about. I saw, much to my dismay, I saw someone going, "I really thought Donald and Joelle's insight about Qui-Gon Joe, whatever it is, was really interesting."
Shut up. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Stories about a show we made about a bunch of docs and nurses and a janitor who loved to hate. I said he's a story.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, it's simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. You can learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.